right, we're back now for the priesthood session. We just returned from the... did anybody bother to look see what stake we're in?
No.
I didn't know this.
I felt welcome because the sign said welcome visitors.
It did say welcome visitors.
And they had balloons outside.
So. And so for this one, we all went together in a little pod. And we all came back here, and now we're recording this. So let's start. We've assembled an all-star cast. So why don't we start and have each of you introduce yourselves. First of all, Nate.
Yeah, hi. I've been on... these conference sessions are so special. I only feel bad this time. There was no drinking game, so...
Not yet. Not yet. All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself, Nate.
I'm from Utah. I wasn't born in Utah, but we got here as quick as we could, and I grew up in the Salt Lake Valley my whole life, and I still presently live in the Salt Lake Valley. I live in Salt Lake now.
And you're a member?
No, a few years ago, my family and I stopped being Mormon.
All right, well, welcome to the studio. And then we have Devin. Welcome back, Devin.
Yeah, again, I'm Devin. I'm actually Nate's neighbor, live around the corner. I'm in Salt Lake. And this is probably the third or fourth time I've helped with conference sessions.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming down. And sitting on in Zilpah's seat, like the first counselor, is Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I'm... Yeah, hi. How's it going? I'm Mike. I was actually originally from Zimbabwe and South Africa. I've been here in the States about 13 years. I married a girl I met on my mission, and we were zealous members for about 8-9 years after we got married. I started having doubts about 4 or 5 years ago, and we both stopped attending about a year ago. So still a member, but only on record, not anywhere else.
Now, Mike, you helped us out of the priesthood session last 6 months ago, right?
That's right, yeah. This is my second time on the podcast.
All right. Well, welcome back. And also returning in his triumphant glory is Joe. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? Yep, I'm back and really excited about this because it was really strange and familiar.
Joe's for those of you who remember or don't, was with us in episode 80. Joe is our ex Jehovah Witness.
Yeah, I'm an ex Jehovah.
Are you full on ex, or have you been shunned yet? I know it was when we left at the end of episode 8. You're still kind of incognito. What's your update?
I'm definitely a full on ex, although I'm not disfellowshipped.
Okay, good.
And but my family is shunning me regardless because I'm a apostate.
All right, so we brought one apostate in as cross training. And to get Joe's opinion. Now this is the first time you've ever been to an LDS conference, I take it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, maybe it's a hobby for you on the side. I don't know.
No,
I'm not one to judge.
Never even been to an LDS like church meeting or anything like this. So this was really interesting to me.
And you know, I was talking to Joe on the phone earlier today, and he said, well, I forgot to bring my Book of Mormon. I said, yeah, we'll sneak you in with that one. So let us know what were your thoughts? What were your overall impressions?
Well, right away, I mean, you were telling me it was just for the priests, their priestly, you know, thing, you know, when you turn 12, and I immediately thought, well, in 78, when the blacks were allowed to have the priesthood, what happened before that? Were black people allowed to go to this special meeting?
Yeah, you asked me that, and I had to frankly say I didn't know. I was a little kid then. Do you guys know? Were our African American friends allowed to the priesthood session?
I don't know. I mean, I was allowed, and I'm not exactly, you know, a card carrying anymore. So
wait, you're not a card carrying African American?
No, card carrying priesthood holder. I guess it's a little harder to, you know.
Yeah, it's harder to slip in the door. I hate to tell you this, Devin, but you're Lily White. You know,
you're right. And I don't know. I would assume that. Well, maybe I shouldn't make assumptions because it would just be based on nothing other than. Assumptions.
You know, my guess would be, and I'm sure somebody will pipe in and tell us on the comment board, my guess would be they weren't banned, but they weren't encouraged. Like, if you would have shown up, they wouldn't have, like, kicked you out or you know, lit a torch or anything, but, you know, because I know that in the mission field, we would bring non-member investigators to priesthood sessions. So it's not like a policed thing. They still broadcast it closed circuit. It's not broadcast like the other ones are, but they publish them in the Ensign the next month. So,
well, in 78, was it being, sent out through closed circuit to the different stake centers, or was it just purely in Salt Lake?
In 78, it was only audio. And it was only audio up until, oh my gosh, like the mid-80s. I remember my brothers going to when it was purely audio. And then you'd go early so you could sit in the choir seats because they're a little bit more comfortable. So it wasn't until the early mid-80s that they started broadcasting on satellite. So that would have been before that time.
It was interesting. My first impressions, though, looking out there and seeing on the video, the first thing I saw was the fancy chairs, the
big red chairs.
Special,
yeah.
Special people, and it reminded me of Star Wars, and like they have these special positions and they get special red fancy chairs, and I was like, that's interesting, and and then the intro of the song was eerily familiar. I mean, the tone of it and the pace of it, I don't know.
Well, a lot of the songs that we sing were borrowed from other, you know, Protestant hymns, mm-hmm. and so you know, they've come down the generation. So there's the tunes might be familiar to you, but we put our own Zion Kingdom ass kicking lyrics on them. Yeah. So
I find it interesting that they in the prayer they said to bless the President Monson.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they've always done that, and that's interesting. I don't know.
That's pretty much par for the course, and almost especially when it comes to conference, to always bless the current prophet in the prayer.
And then I saw that badass organ.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I really want to hear Phantom of the Opera played on that.
they actually do. do they do concerts in the?
Yeah, they do the big Christmas concert at the end of every year.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll belt out some fun stuff on the organ then, but...
Yeah, I don't know how much they do in the conference center, but like every Wednesday you can head down to the tabernacle and hear all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, it is a big organ. I don't know who's compensating for what, but it is a big organ with lots of pipes.
I'm just absolutely blown away by like how familiar things were and how familiar it felt. And I've heard like different... I guess non-denominational Christian stuff before, but man, the Mormon stuff is eerily familiar, and I could just literally go on about the similarities, and I was just kind of blown away.
So you felt at home?
Yeah, right.
You were equally as bored in this service as you were.
You know what? Zilpa was asking me that, and it was interesting. It was more interesting to me than sitting through a Jehovah's Witness one because it's different. And so I'm kind of fascinated with it. But if it was a Jehovah's Witness one, I probably would have been sound asleep.
I did feel a little bad, you know, because the rest of these poor saps, they knew what they were getting into. But, you know, I felt bad that I brought you in there. There were a couple times I thought, oh, yeah, I can't believe I took this Saturday night away from him to do this.
Oh, no, it's fun. It's cool.
If you look to either side, you saw plenty of people sleeping around you, too. I saw them.
All right. Well, why don't we dive in? This session was conducted by President Eyring of the First Presidency. Of course, the First Presidency always dominates the priesthood session. And we'll get to Eyring's talk, which was kind of funny. I did notice in the choir, they had a joint priesthood choir from, I think they said Ogden Institute and Logan Institute. The double Windsor is back in. There were a lot of wide tie knots. Did you notice?
I did notice, but I wouldn't have thought to say anything. But when you mentioned it, yeah, I did notice a lot of really big knots on ties.
Hey, you know, like I say, we're here to review conference for all those who don't do it anymore. So we got to pay attention to the details. I don't wear a tie much anymore. So, you know, I had my little half Windsor and I felt a little embarrassed, little size envy I felt. All right. So that we opened up with Neil Anderson of the 12. Is he the most recent or second? I can't keep him and Cook. Which one came?
I think Cook was first because I don't remember Anderson at all.
Yeah, he's the junior member of the 12, and he started out with a bang with one of the three M's. Of course, the three M's are
marriage,
masturbation,
and missionary work.
Right, right. So every priesthood session, you have to hit the three M's. So he started out with with the missionaries, and reiterated the quote, was it by Monson, I think, that said, every worthy, able young man.
And that wasn't that, because when I heard that, I don't remember Monson saying that as much, but going back to, I don't know if it was Benson who originally said that, every young man to serve a mission, was that Kimball? It seemed like a throwback from a past president.
Yeah, it's... yeah, they were banging an old-fashioned drum there of getting, you know, because there's been the whole raising the bar thing that they did for a while, where they wanted to, you know, not everybody, but the cream of the crop, and now, you know, worthy and able. You know, usually you hear every able-bodied person, you know, you're just talking about the infirmed and the feeble who's not able to come. So that's a pretty strong word, I guess.
Yeah, something else that he kept bringing up was the whole year of the chosen generation thing. And my wife and I were talking about this morning just how, you know, we're reading stuff to the youth now talking about the chosen generation and you're special. And we're like, wait a second, this is the stuff we were told. And we thought we were this chosen generation. Yeah. And now we've been replaced by a whole new group of young whippersnappers.
We're just broadening the definition of generation to include, if you're alive and hearing this, then you're of this generation.
I thought it was really interesting, the connection with Jehovah's Witnesses here, like how they mentioned people had to give things up to be on a mission. And that's such a theme with the Jehovah's Witnesses. Oh, they gave up this and they gave up that. But then look what happened. They went to one more house and they, you know, accepted the gospel. And it's just the same kind of examples, or, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses call them experiences, to, you know, bolster people's faith.
Yeah. Same.
One of the things I found interesting is there's just a slight difference in the way he talked about, you know, the gospel spreading across the earth, you know, because that's what I grew up hearing, is that, you know, eventually the gospel was going to be everywhere and everyone was going to hear it and it was going to be this huge membership. He quoted from Nephi saying that the church would always be small but spread around everywhere. So I thought that was kind of interesting that he kind of is, they're trying to, or at least he was trying to tweak that message to, there's not going to be many of us, but we're going to be all over the place.
Yeah, in the morning session, they gave our membership count at 14.1 million, and I think Stark had projected it at 25 million or 100 million or something by now. So we have to explain why not everybody is a Mormon these
days.
Not
quite there yet, I guess.
And it's apparently because the Jehovah's Witnesses are using the same God-given
Holy Spirit
methods to track down people. So
There was a couple of quotes I noticed that were kind of famous quotes that were stolen and then kind of tweaked to give them a Mormon slant. And he gave the first one, the old quote was, the sun never sets in the British Empire. And he gave the sun never sets in righteous missionaries quote, which I just found interesting.
Interesting.
And there are a few more that I noted that other speakers gave, famous quotes that just they'd tweak to fit their talks.
I was really interested. Neil Anderson said, I am going to speak specifically to young men between the ages of, and I wrote down 21 to 25, and I thought, really? What's he going to say?
I wrote down 12 to 25.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, because that's the cutoff age for missionaries. That's why.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, I that was completely lost on me, so I'm glad you guys caught those details.
Another thing that Neil did old school was bring up the apocalypse. You know, it's not... It's, you got to tie the missionary work in with the destruction of the world. What was the point, that we were staving it off or we were bringing it on? I wasn't quite clear what the role was there.
I didn't get a sense of us affecting the time, just that it was coming and it was imminent and it was our job to be ready for it.
Preparing the world for Christ's return.
Man, if you guys want to hear end of the world stuff, go to a Jehovah's Witness thing. That's what their mantra is, the end of the world is coming, it's happening now or yesterday.
But they don't hoard food like Mormons do they?
No, they're missing out on that one.
All right. So the next speaker was Steve Snow from the Presidency of the 70. A rather unremarkable talk on hope. Yeah. Yay, hope.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of an Obama rally or something like that. Hope.
He was also the first speaker had a reference to the All Blacks, which I like because I lived in New Zealand for a while. And he had a couple of references to the Super Bowl and World Cup, so it was two talks with two sports references, right?
That was really interesting, too. That, I mean, they're appealing to a broader worldwide audience, not just the Super Bowl in America.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too. And one of the things you can they always throw a bone. They haven't fully gone like, you know, worldwide addressing. They say the Super Bowl or World Cup, huh? You know, it's always they put that little hook on the end. Yeah, but yeah, they talked about Roger. He talked about Roger Bannister breaking the 4 minute mile, and yeah, just a generic okay talk. I don't really have any complaint about.
The one thing I noticed in there is he did give a reference. This is something that has bugged me because I've got personal experience with it. I'm talking about how if parents are faithful in raising their kids, the kids won't leave the church. And my parents and I have a lot of difficulties. We're not speaking right now, and part of the difficulty is I feel really bad for them because I don't think they did anything wrong raising me, but because of what I discovered, I've left the church, and I think a lot of times they feel guilty about that. And talks like this, I'm sure, just heap more guilt on them, thinking, what did we do wrong with this kid? Why has he left? And I don't think it's fair to people, because my parents have nothing to do with the reasons I've left.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah, that's caused a lot of pain.
I thought, speaking about Stephen Snow, I thought it was very interesting that it was his talk that brought up the William Martin handcart companies first I heard, and I was like,
That's silly. On the conference bingo chart, isn't it? Handcart companies, and you know,
I have to tell you, I shed a single tear for little old Mary Murdoch who made the travels across and didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But she died facing Zion.
Yes. So I thought I was going to say she died with her boots on, but it was facing Zion.
Facing Zion is all that really matters.
So she was facing back to Missouri, or which way was she facing?
Oh, there's always one in every crowd. I guess we don't know which way she was facing, do we? All right. So the next speaker was Larry Gibson, who's the first counselor of the Young Men's Presidency. He opened with an analogy of rabbits, which I thought was kind of weird and a little bit creepy.
And then he compared rabbits to Mormons, which, if you think about the way rabbits breed.
Yeah, so I was trying to follow the analogy. He talked about the dog would sneak in and, like, take care of the rabbit population. What's the metaphor there? Where are you going with this?
He never tied it back into it in any way that I was aware of.
He almost started crying, though, when he mentioned the rabbits.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to understand that's how we show that we're sincere in the church is to tear up a little bit.
To pause and get a little choked up. And
yeah. Glenn Beck, but usually taken down a couple notches. All right. Yeah, there's he talked about deacons a lot. The only thing that I thought was interesting is he pointed out one of the roles of the deacon was to warn the ward, which, of course, he pulls out of Doctrine and Covenants, but what exactly is a 12-year-old going to warn you about? I mean, those things are just kind of weird.
He talked about like the power of presidencies and one of the things he mentioned is that like the deacon's quorum president was one of only four people that could be called president in the ward, and so I started doing the math in my head of how many people they call, and there's got to be more than four.
Well, I think it was the keys to presidency, which have to be linked to the priesthood. So you've got the three Aaronic priesthood quorums, and then the elders quorum, and I think that's it.
Apparently, the young women's presidency is.
Well, so you have the teachers' quorum, the deacons' quorum president, teachers' quorum president, the bishop, who's the president of the priest quorum, and then you have the elders' quorum president, and of course the stake the is the president of the high priest.
I'm going to need some kind of graphical flowchart for that.
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, because they in a previous session, you know, they even said it later on the session, talk about men and women are equal, blah 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 blah. But here you have a classic example of how the church is fundamentally misogynistic. That they say there's only four people in the ward who really have the power of presidency, and one of them is a 12-year-old boy. A 12-year-old boy is higher in status and rank than a full-grown woman who's
like
in charge
the
of all the
Relief Society
women.
President, or the Young Women's President,
right.
Or the president of any of the three breakdowns of the I don't know. Do they have presidents in the Young Women's, like
they do.
Beehives and Miami-Dades and everything like that?
Yeah, I found that really interesting. That when you think about it, what keeps the men going? What keeps them wrapped in? I mean, yeah, they're initially converted, or we think about whatever. Maybe we don't if you're raised in it, but it's the same with Jehovah's Witnesses. It's like you got to give them something, you know, some kind of title, some kind of a little bit of authority. And even when you're a little kid, you get a priesthood, and then you get I don't know what the steps are. I mean, they're different with Jehovah's Witnesses, but they got to give them something. And for some reason, women, I haven't found, really need that. That, you know, they just believe it and they're happy, like, being together and praising the Lord and everything like that. But guys, we want that power. We want to climb that corporate ladder in the church, you know?
Yeah, there was a study that was released, I think, last week or so, and maybe I can find a link for it put up on the website. And it was actually briefly mentioned in the afternoon session, but they basically did a survey of attitude about, you know, women in the priesthood. And it didn't just talk to Mormons, talk to other denominations. And basically a large number of men, like 60% or something, said, yeah, we're fine with them giving the priesthood to the women. But the Mormon women, less than 10% of them thought that the women should be in priesthood power. So to reiterate your point, that was like the lowest, and it's kind of has everybody scratching their head, like, why do women are so? But they're
conditioned. We need it. We need the power.
I think there might be some of that there, but I think they're conditioned that way. They're conditioned. They're told over again, you don't need it. You're more spiritual without it. Blah 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 blah. You know, just sit there quietly, do your stuff. You know, we got it under control. We're all equal, and even though we're in charge,
I think if we didn't have any kind of position to strive to, we would just give up on that junk.
But I do think, to your point, I think that it taps into sort of the, you know, like, men can't just watch basketball games. They have to do brackets and bet money on it and stuff like that. So it's that same sort of thing. You know, men can't just go to church. They have to be, like, toting the tray around or wearing the usher badge or whatever.
I'm a ministerial servant now. I have responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. All right. The next speaker was President Uchtdorf, second counselor in the first presidency. And he led off with an old chestnut Mormon metaphor. Devin, you're our storyteller. You want to retell his
Okay, sure. I'll go ahead and tell this. I actually quite enjoyed it. He talked about a man in who'd saved up for a long time because he really wanted to go on this Mediterranean cruise and go see the world and go see these cities around the Mediterranean. And he saved up, got on the ship, and he packed a separate bag with cans of beans and food like this so he could be really frugal and because he didn't have very much money. Apparently he went the whole cruise with, like, eating his cans of beans in his room and not going to any of the shows because he was saving his money. And then at the very last day, just found out that was all included from the beginning. And that kind of set his, this story kind of set up his, the kind of the running theme of, how did he put it? He said he was living beneath his privileges. And then he went on to talk about how we as priesthood holders live beneath live beneath the privileges of the priesthood.
Right. I thought the lesson was, you know, read the brochure. It's one I've heard, and sometimes it's a little old lady, and in some variations of the story, she comes up at the end and tries to pay the steward. They're like, oh, that's all included. And yeah, there's always that tragic twist at the end but he threw in new Mediterranean details about going and seeing Rome. And
well,
stuff.
I mean, especially with him being, you know, German, right? It kind of puts the whole international flavor to it, right?
Yeah.
And I like that it wasn't a plane story; it was a boat story. And I thought, wow, he's going to do this.
Joe Uchtdorf, President Uchtdorf, was a pilot for a lot of years, and he's a better storyteller than most. You probably saw that his conference talked a little bit better than the others.
Yeah, it was definitely easier to listen to.
Yeah, yeah. The only problem is if you're listening, Dieter, the plane shtick is getting a little old. You know, we've heard it now for a few years, and yeah. Well, you know, my challenge, I really like the cruise ship metaphor too, but to my faithful listeners out there, I want you to ask yourself, who's really not going to the buffet? You know, there's a lot of fun activities on the cruise ship of Mother Earth. Just saying, it's all included with the ticket. All right, let's go.
Oh, and speaking of, I think that you had mentioned a little bit earlier about kind of recycling quotes.
Oh yeah,
he kind of paraphrased Reagan. I don't know if anyone else caught that about slipping the surly bonds of Earth or something like that
to escape into the silvery heavens. It was the one he gave after the Challenger crash.
It was from Reagan's Challenger crash talk. I thought that was pretty interesting.
All right. Of course, always the first presidency ends out the session, and the next speaker was President Eyring. He's the first counselor. You know, he opened sort of, wow, he was like He was bomb diggity up there. It was like a session at Wise Guys or something. Yeah, you know?
It was like a Comedy Central kind of thing he had going on.
The opening with the jokes is so like funny, like when they do that. With every religion, really, like they open with a joke and hook you and, oh, ha, ha, inside jokes. I didn't really get them, but everybody laughed.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed even before the joke, as he was walking out to the pulpit, he is looking really old.
He did. I saw that too. He had an old man shuffle coming up.
Yeah.
He
walked up mighty slow.
Yeah. Yeah. And the rest of his talk was utterly unremarkable.
Yeah. I had the least amount of notes about his than anyone else's.
He did mention see with the eye of faith, you know, and I put a star next to that because it reminds me of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Because they always say, like, oh, you got to see, you know, through the eyes of faith, you know? And it's like, see through the eyes of bullshit. Because it doesn't, when you're seeing through the eyes of faith, it doesn't have to make sense. It's like, don't think about it, basically, is what they're saying.
I also liked his inspirational story at the end about the sick old man he went to visit. And he was doing his priesthood duty about hectoring his nurse about being baptized into the church.
Yeah. That story kind of made me sad because you look around, especially in Utah. You have all these old couples who could be out enjoying their retirement. They could be out hanging with their grandkids, going on cruises and experiencing the buffets. But instead, every single day, they're dragging themselves up to the temple. They're just eking the last little bits of life out, just trying to do their service for God. Just so when they die, they're going to get that eternal reward. And they're missing out on so much good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people in the service industry who have to hear the discussions over and over again. All right. The last talk was President Monson's. I do have to say that middle hour was really, really dry.
That was a snoozer.
Glad I had the smartphone. We're making it sound better than it was. I promise. But Monson, I was thinking about three-fourths of the way in. If you were going to write a parody of conference talks and try to include every cliche you could in one talk, it would look just like – it would read just like his talk. I think he hit the porn. He hit the old school. Hey, you got to get married, and we haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah, that was so weird to me. I had never. I mean, I've heard things. You know, I've heard Brigham Young University, and I've heard things like that growing up here in Utah. But man, it was really weird for me. Oh, you got to get married. I see groups of men going around without girls. Where are the girls with these men? I'm like, so weird.
But you've got to realize, Joe, also that. I mean, this is the guy, right? This is supposed to be the living mouthpiece of God. So, I mean, of all the people that we saw, that was the prophet who was speaking that.
I got the feeling it was a bad thing if you weren't married and you were of age. And it was like, man, it's awkward.
He broke out a couple of quotes. He had one by Harold Lee about going beyond the age of marriage. He had one by Gordon B. Hinckley about reaching out your hand to the single sisters. And I was just waiting for a Brigham Young quote. Was it Brigham Young that did the
Menace to
Society? I was disappointed he didn't bring that one up.
Yeah, he kind of hinted at it, right? He said, there have been quotes. I'm going to read just two of them, you know, leaving the Menace to Society hanging unsaid. But what I found disturbing in his whole thing there, every time he was talking about women, he was talking about them as a commodity. You know, the women are out there, and to me, the whole shtick of that women thing, and even when he mentioned in connection to other parts, it was dehumanizing. He didn't consider them people. He even said, you know, if people aren't getting married, it's all the girls want to, and they're just waiting for you to come validate them and choose them and whatever. It wasn't like this is a relationship of equals. It's you men have to go find these sweet sisters who just want you to marry them.
Well, and he mentioned that one of the things I wrote down is where, you know, he can sympathize with the single sisters who, you know, no one's come to claim them yet. But, you know, all you single men out there, you are the ones who I can't sympathize with, and you're the ones that are failing in your duties.
Couple other things he's, you know, he said, which is sort of weird and kind of stupid. He went on and on about the name of the Lord. Don't take it in vain. Well, all right, what's the name of the Lord? I mean, I don't like hear people saying
Jehovah,
or you know, in the Mormon paradigm, it's Elohim.
Elohim, yeah.
You know, Yahweh. If you say God, that's not the name
it's
of
not
the
a
Lord.
Name, yeah.
You know, and so it's not like the teenager going around saying, "Oh, great Jehovah." Or what's the old fa- oh, by Jove.
But as Jehovah Witnesses, we weren't allowed to say, oh my God, either.
Well, Mormons aren't either. But
even still, because they're taking that from Don't Take the Lord's Name in Vain, even though that's not a name and whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to that, not to drag us back to the marriage thing, but I wanted to point out, I was just noticed looking down at my notes, and I remembered, you know, one thing he kind of contradicted himself on in the same talk. He started criticizing people for waiting until they got married to or waiting until they were financially stable or could afford to get married.
Yeah.
To get married.
I was blown away by that.
You know, it's like a blessing, and couples grow closer through like struggling through those hard times. And then later when he was decrying divorce, he was talking about how, you know, financial problems can really cause strife in a marriage. And
there was another one just like that. He said when he was talking about chiding the young men to get married, he said, you just need to have faith.
Yeah.
You know, rather than wait for the right person. And then he said later when he's talking about divorce, he was saying, you need to be careful about selecting your mate.
It's all right if you make $4.50 an hour. You can have faith and that'll get you by.
Right, right.
But don't let it get, don't get divorced over it.
I thought it was really interesting he brought up these standards have always been the same in the churches.
Yeah,
and I was like, really? I'm like, I don't know a lot about the Mormon faith, but like, I'm just thinking the standards of the world have degraded so great, and we're just used to be that they were the same, you know.
Right.
They've never been the same in any religion. Well, religion has always been like, you know, slowly trying to like evolve, I guess, to the world as what is happening. And one thing that immediately popped in my mind, because the only thing that I can really think about that I know about the Mormons, is the garments have changed specifically for the women. And what has changed? Why are they less modest now? Because that's the whole idea of what big part of them, where they were to be modest, and now they're lower cut.
Yeah.
Did God change?
We have a rule that we don't complain about the less modest women's garments. So I'll let that pass. I'll let that pass this time. But no, you're right. Yeah, he used the word metamorphosis of society, and he said that society and the church used to be very similar, and now they're drifting apart. This is one of those things that either he's stupid or he's a liar, because I'm sorry. When I say stuff like that, I was getting in trouble. But you look at the church from the 19th century, could anything be more different than 19th century Mormonism with their multiple wives and, you know, their garments that had collars and just the idea that we were really close to society back then, but now we're drifting really apart is just absurd.
The culture changes and the religion slowly but surely adapt. And they do. They always do.
And then it's always about how bad society is. And at last conference, his talk was very much the same. Society's horrible. It's terrible out there. The filth and everything's just going to get you down and it's going to drag you to hell. But the church is great and it'll keep you safe. And I have a mother-in-law who is just a solid believer in the church. And she just believes that outside the church, the world is just evil and dark. And it's really sad to see what little she thinks of the rest of the world.
Is it some of it just old guy curmudgeonliness? Because he did bring up song lyrics. And let me tell you, go out to your library and find some old recordings of blues songs from like the 1910s. Those things are as dirty as anything you can find today. Lyrics don't get any dirtier. They stay constantly dirty. The only one last thing that I have then is he did say, when he's talking about divorce, that he said, brethren, you cannot exercise unrighteous dominion over your over your wife. This is something they say all the time.
Emphasized unrighteous.
Unrighteous
too.
Dominion.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
This is sort of like saying we don't allow wrongful lynchings. Like, as if there's this other category of lynchings. You know, how can they keep saying over and over again that men and women are equal? Then they say unrighteous dominion. So that implies there is a righteous dominion.
Right. Yeah.
If there is a dominion, there's not a marriage of equals.
Well, he talked the couple that he used a couple as an example. And when he talked about them, one of the ways they resolved their problems was she recognized him as the head of the home. And this is 3 seconds after he said, you know, husband and wife are equal. Not one's not better than the other, but the man's the head of the home. And
he definitely
needs to submit.
He definitely re-emphasized the unrighteous dominion, meaning there is a righteous dominion that you can have. I thought another thing it was really creepy how he said, just for me, as an onlooker, it was really creepy how he said, like, you were chosen. Like, he was talking about the priesthood and all, I guess, all of us watching, that you were chosen. And I don't know, it was really creepy. Like, it was some, like, inside, like, Masonic secret meeting thing. Like, we were secretly, oh my God, we were chosen. This is awesome. I don't know. It was weird to me.
Do the Jehovah's Witnesses not think they're the chosen people?
I don't think they have like this, you know, I'm sure they think they're chosen. Yeah, they think they're chosen. But I mean, it was just like, he was like, you are chosen. You are God's chosen children.
Did the Jehovah's Witnesses ever call everybody else Gentiles?
Yeah, they call them worldly people. I think I've heard you guys say that before.
The Gentiles.
Worldly Gentiles, yeah.
Right. Well, what was kind of cool is I got to sit next to Joe, and having grown up in the church, things like that just go right over my head. But I'm sitting there, and every so often he'd write a little note in his paper and show it to me. And it was cool experiencing conference as I was sitting there through the eyes of someone who wasn't used to it and who was actually taking everything literally. And it was a really cool experience.
All right, any last minute thoughts about the priesthood session?
Go ahead. I had a question if we have time for it.
No, go ahead.
I was wondering about it seemed like he implied that cancellations of ceilings can only really, I mean, I guess not only, but mostly come from women. And I was like, that's interesting. And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, men can be sealed to a multi million different women, so it really would only be coming from women.
That's a good catch. So if I have a ceiling with a woman and I'm a man, I can get married. Yeah, he implied that it was because the women are more righteous and were working on their marriages. But it's because I don't need a cancellation of my ceiling to my first wife to get married to a second wife. But a woman does. She can't get married in the temple to another man.
Yeah, he definitely implied that it was like the guy's deal or whatever, you know. But the women are really the only ones that are asking for that.
This is priesthood session. And there's a long tradition of beating up on the men, you know. So it does tend to be sort of slanted against the men.
I have one more comment, and that is, how many times in that session I heard the words close quote? That's not a common thing in speech, but boy, oh boy, they close a lot of quotes.
You got to air quote it like Chris Farley.
Did you notice they don't? I haven't watched any of the other sessions. I listened to parts of some of the others, but for a while, about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they got really into like media. Like, they'd show the quotes and show pictures of Jesus and stuff. There was no graph. Either the graphics guy was asleep tonight.
God,
or
I love the fact that you guys have graphics. The Jehovah's Witnesses don't have any.
Well, we used to have graphics. There was nothing up there tonight.
There were a couple Moroni's and pictures.
Oh, we did. I must have been playing with my iPhone.
Boring speaker the whole time. At least there's some random slide here and there.
All right, so the guy wasn't asleep. All right. Any other? Remaining thoughts?
I thought it was kind of weird. Sometimes they would speak in like old English. Like, I know they did it when they're quoting, but sometimes
when they pray or refer to their prayers. Yeah, they use that old. Yeah, that's how righteous people pray. So just
and
keep that.
It's interesting
that
people, like, when they're preaching, you know, from the pulpit or whatever, talk in a different way that they don't speak in everyday life. When you talk to them outside that, they're not, you know. You know, I don't know, righteous speak.
Yeah, there's a very specific Mormon, cantation, a cadence, which is to hold a pitch high, 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 low, and end the speech high, 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 low, high, 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 low, and they do that a lot in prayers too. So,
well, and the other thing is the talks are written weeks ahead of time so they can get translated. They've got proofreaders that read them, correct the English, make sure the sentences are complete. So. It's not just them up there speaking by inspiration. It's reading a prepared speech that's very careful.
And there's another round of inspiration that will happen a week from now.
in case it's needed.
There's always the inspired editing.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, brethren, thanks for suffering through the priesthood session with me.
Thanks. It was fun.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.